Hey, everybody. Welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com. Movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm super excited for this week's show because it is our annual rundown of our favorite horror movies of the year, which means I'm joined for this very special episode by my horror BFF, celebrated author Heather Wixon. Hey, Heather.
Hey, I don't know what's celebrated, but I guess technically I'm an author.
I am celebrating you right now. You are as celebrated as can be. Heather's new book is now out. Tell us all about the new book, Heather.
Oh, I mean, didn't we do this on Red Eye?
We might have, but I don't know if everybody listens to the Craven Cravens.
Oh, well, they should.
Come I agree with you, but they might skip those. So I figured since this is F This Movie proper.
Okay. It's because it's like, it's one of those where it's like, it's been out a few months now. So I'm just like, oh, yeah, do I have to talk about this thing? So Monsters, Makeup and Effects Volume 2 is out. Features 20 more interviews with special effects legends. And yeah, two down, two to go.
Two to go. I love it.
Totally. trying to think of like, if there's anything else. I mean, aren't people tired of me talking about this?
Never. I can't believe you're going to write four of these things.
I can't either.
I'm sure.
I can't either.
Well, congratulations on the book. And again, if you guys haven't listened to the Craven Craven shows, please go back and listen to those. Although we got bad iTunes reviews for Craven Craven, just so you know.
We did. What happened?
We don't talk about the movies enough. Tangents. Yeah, I guess we shouldn't have talked about like Grandma's Boy or whatever the fuck we talked about. I don't know what we talked about.
Oh, no. Okay. New year, new us. We're going to get back on track, I guess, for the last few.
Yeah.
Sorry, everybody.
We've got Cursed up next.
We'll have lots to dig in there.
I would think so. I wish I could see that that other cut of the movie, but I don't think it actually exists.
I don't think it does.
This was a really good year for horror movies, wasn't it?
I had a hell of a time putting together a top 10 because I have like 15 other movies that I'm like, I can't believe I'm not including these. And I'm not joking. I actually have the list of the other great films that I'm bummed that I can't include on this list.
Well, you'll have to read those at the end as your like honorable mentions.
Yeah. This was honest. And like, there's one of them where I was going to bed, I would say last night, but it was this morning. And I was like, oh my God, I didn't put that on my list. I was like, I had to write myself an email to remind myself like, no, you have to go in this morning and readjust your list because there's no way you can't put this on there.
Yeah.
It was a lot. This year was bananas.
It was a good year.
It was. We were spoiled.
Yeah.
You know, we were absolutely spoiled.
I wonder how many crossover movies we're going to have. I'll bet we have three or four. Maybe five. But
we'll see.
Let's do the thing where if you name a movie and it's higher up on my list, we'll wait to talk about it until we get to its highest position and vice versa.
Okay, love it.
And I will let you go first with your number 10 favorite horror movie of 2022.
All right. Well, my number 10 is a sequel that kind of came out of nowhere. And I was like, well, this will at least be fun. And then absolutely won me over. And that is William Brent Bell's Orphan First Kill.
Technically higher on my list.
Okay, so we will have to talk later about that.
My number 10 is probably higher on yours.
Okay.
And that is also a sequel, Scream 2022.
It is much higher on my list, yes.
I figured, okay. So we'll get to your 9 because my 9 is Orphan First Kill. So we'll get right back to Orphan First Kill, but go ahead with your 9.
Okay. My 9 probably would have been, I don't want to say it would have been higher in any other year. It just was like, I sort of got all of these could be like number 1, 2, and 3 in my heart.
Okay.
But my number 9 is, and it's, I'm guessing this is probably maybe higher on your list if you've seen it. Because it feels like totally your kind of movie. And it's Travis Stevens as a wounded fawn.
It is higher on my list. What, eventually we're going to be able to talk about these movies.
Well, I guess we could dive into Orphan First Kill
Let's
instead.
do it. That's my 9. And since you had it at 10, let's hear your spiel on Orphan First Kill.
So I was just one of those where I was like, okay, let's just see what's going to happen. Because I'm like, it had been what, like 13 years since the
Yeah,
first movie,
it's a real
and I
Avatar
was,
situation.
yeah, and I was just like, what could we possibly be doing with this sequel? And like William Brent Belf, it like just does a phenomenal job here. And also, I want to credit David Coggeshall for writing this story, because like, again, it's one of those where it's like it perfectly kind of leans into what you love about the first one, but does something completely different. And Isabel Furman is just so fan freaking tastic in this movie. And just seeing like how she ends up kind of like getting manipulated. Like, it was not the movie I was expecting. I was expecting more of like the first Orphan. And then there is a very decidedly bold moment in this movie where everything changes and Julia Stiles like becomes this total badass. And I was like, wait, what? I mean, I like literally paused the movie and I was like, holy shit, we're doing this? And then the movie just like goes into overdrive and it's fantastic.
Yeah, I like you. I think maybe had kind of low expectations because I like the first Orphan, but I think it almost lives or dies by its twist. I mean, it's well directed. Isabel Furman is great. The cast is really good, but it's like the reason we still talk about it is, oh my gosh, it does this crazy thing. And so to do a prequel to it where you already know the twist seems like you're shooting yourself in the foot, but then they find a new way to be surprising in the prequel, which I thought was awesome, which you kind of hinted at. And as much as I enjoyed Isabel Furman, I really do think this is Julia Stiles' movie. It's so good to, I know she never went anywhere, but it felt like we were getting Julia Stiles back, and that was awesome.
I know. Do you think we'll get like a Save the Last Dance sequel now, finally?
I want a
Maybe.
prequel to
I don't look
all
like.
every Julia Stiles movie.
Okay, I love it. Although, 10 Things I Hate About You might be a little sad.
That's true.
I still get sad of trying to revisit that one
That
because of Heath.
honestly, and I think I've said this somewhere before, that movie, maybe more than any other movie, makes me sad about Heath Ledger. It's not The Dark Knight. It's not, I don't know why. Maybe it's because he's so young, but it's like I watch it and it just kills me.
Yeah, it really does. Yeah, that one, honestly, I just recently, and it had been a while since I'd seen it, I just recently rewatched Brokeback Mountain.
Oh, yeah.
And that one, like, I ugly cried in theaters during that movie. Like, I ugly sobbed this time. So it's a bummer. But in any case, to keep it on a lighter note, Julia Stiles rules. This movie certainly demonstrates that, and
Yeah.
let's get more Julia Stiles out there, I think.
I agree. And let's get more William Brent Bell because between The Boy and this movie, I feel like he's on a roll.
Yes. It's funny because I know people will still always throw out there The Devil Inside, and like
No, I never saw
it's fine. Like, the ending
that
is the thing. It didn't even bother me that much. I think I almost enjoyed it because of I saw how people were getting pissed off in real time.
one.
And that just made me cackle because I'm evil. So I don't even mind that as much. But yeah, fantastic job by everybody involved.
Absolutely. And that's available for streaming. It's you can rent it on disc. I think it's on Paramount Plus still.
It is, yeah.
Okay. So it's out there and it's available. Your 9 was a wounded fawn, so we're at your 8.
Wow, we're just flying through it. Like,
We really
okay,
are.
we really are. Okay, so I can't believe this isn't higher, but as I was like thinking about it, like I think maybe it's because it's one of the movies I just haven't revisited a lot. And then also, like, I don't even know if I necessarily call it a horror movie. It's definitely science fiction. But so my number 8 is Jordan Peele's Nope.
All right, go for it.
Like in my general list of my favorite movies of 2022, it's much higher.
Okay.
But it's like one of those, like, honestly, this was one of those years I didn't even have to cheat. Like, sometimes I have to throw in a movie here or there that's like genre adjacent. And I didn't even have to do that this year, which is kind of amazing. But I've only seen it like twice. And the second time I saw it was at the drive-in, and the projection was terrible. So it wasn't even like I could really see it. So I need to get back into it because I'm sure it probably would go a little bit higher. But it's just like, I don't even know what to say about it, because like it's Jordan Peele basically doing his riff on Spielberg, which immediately, like, I'm already in, and sort of this love letter to like kids who grew up in the 90s, just based on like a lot of little production design and costuming choices and things like that. I think Kiki Palmer gives probably one of my favorite performances of the year here. I think the design of Jean Jacket is breathtaking. Like, I still look at that and I'm just like, wow, like, I can't believe this exists. And it feels so different. Like, how hard is it to make an alien creature that's different these days? Like, we've been, it's like Ridley Scott set this bar, and like, and then you've got the little green, like the little green slash gray men that we always think about. Like, how do you do something different? And Nope achieves that. And I think sneakily Daniel Kaluuya is phenomenal here in ways that I don't think people necessarily fully appreciate. And then beyond that, Michael Wincott, like, how amazing is he in this movie as well? So it's like, it's astonishing, like, what they were able to do with this movie, and that Universal was like, yeah, cool, go make your weird alien movie. Because it's like, it's just one of those things where, like, going into it, we all thought we knew what the movie was. We all thought we knew what the creature was, and it wasn't. And I think that's pretty rare to be able to surprise people like that.
Yeah, I think we're very fortunate to be living through this period where Jordan Peele has like a blank check to just make Jordan Peele movies. Who knows how long that will last, you know, if he makes it like if he goes down the Shyamalan route and kind of makes one that tanks, then does he have to go back to making, not back to, but start making other people's movies, or who knows, you know, I don't even want to think about that because for right now, Jordan Peele is like really a singular force in horror. And I definitely need to rewatch Nope. I only saw it the one time in the theater and I honestly didn't totally connect to it. It said a lot of stuff about like the entertainment industry that I actually really liked. There's another 3 hour long Damien Chazelle epic out right now that tries to say a lot of the same stuff. And I think Nope does it better and in a more interesting way that doesn't just have an elephant shit all over you. But I
Yeah,
loved.
Damien and I don't connect.
No, that's
No,
weird.
we just don't. We just don't.
All the stuff with Gordy, is that his name? The chimp?
Yeah, the chimp.
That's some of the best stuff in any movie this year. I mean, just the courage to open with that sequence and then come back to it. All the Steven Yeun stuff I love. So there's tons of and you're right about Daniel Kaluuya. He gives for me the performance of the movie. I liked Kiki Palmer a lot, but seeing Daniel Kaluuya, who, you know, wins an Oscar for Judas and the Black Messiah playing a completely different kind of role. And then here is so sort of quiet and subdued and man of few words. He's playing this sort of near mute cowboy. He's so good in this movie. And I hope that he keeps working with Jordan Peele.
Yeah, it feels like it's like his character is very much a throwback in a lot of ways. I think to the era, if you
Era.
will, of cinema that, I think Jordan Peele is exploring here. And I think there's something really fascinating about it. So yeah, it's one, like, honestly, if I'd there's a few more movies on here that I've watched a heck of a lot more. So that's why they probably placed as high as they have, because they're just so ingrained in me now. But yeah, if I had watched Nope probably another time or two, like, it probably would have placed higher. But this was tough, Patrick. This was really tough.
It was tough. My bottom few were a little tougher for me. Like my one through six, my one through seven, I had no problem with. And it was these last few where I was like, ah, what do I squeeze in here? And what do I try to make room for. So like my number eight is a movie I just recently saw, and I wanted to include it, A, because it's a foreign film, and I realized I had otherwise all American films on my list, and B, it's maybe the only monster movie on my list, and that is a film from Finland that our favorite Finnish listener, Miko, has been championing, and it's called Hatching.
Hatching is great.
Yeah. I loved the bird monster in Hatching. I loved all the stuff that it had to say about perfection in the age of social media. I thought the little girl gave two really good performances. It's a weird, really interesting movie that I would like more people to check out.
Yeah, it's on my my alternate list.
Okay.
Yeah, because I think I saw that through Sundance, I want to say is the first time I saw it, and then did some stuff with the creature effects, I think, for Indie Horror Month.
Sure.
And stuff like that. And yeah, I agree with you. I love the fact that it's like this like bubblegum like looking movie that has just these like really creepy things lurking below the surface, which just is like, to me, when you can do sort of that juxtaposition, like I'm always in.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think it's a really fantastic film. And I'm trying to think. I think that might have been like her first full feature. So I think the director did like some TV over there.
Okay. I'm trying to look it up right now, but
and maybe some shorts. I covered a lot of stuff last
Hannah
year.
Hannah Bergholm is her name.
Yeah.
And it's hard to say. It looks like TV, shorts, a lot of shorts. Yeah, it looks like Hatching is her first feature.
Yeah, and the little girl too, she actually wasn't just a straight up gymnast. She wasn't really an actress, I think, coming into this.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and because they knew they needed to get the physicality of the character right.
Right. Well, right. The gymnastics is something like you can't fake.
Not in that budget level.
Right.
You know. And then she just like comes in and just destroys it with her performance as like a first timer also. So yeah, it's a really fantastic movie.
Yeah. I remember seeing the trailer for it before another movie that's higher up on my list. And it was one of those where you could clearly tell that this was not an American film, but they were trying to disguise that fact by having no dialogue in the trailer. But the imagery itself was so compelling and weird that it came on my radar. And then when it came out, I totally missed it. I ended up streaming it on Hulu.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So my eight is Hatching, which brings us to your seven.
To my seven. Okay. So my seven might have been, it's definitely one of my top three movies I saw at Fantastic Fest this year. And it's like, when you can put vampires and comedies together, I'm in. Like I'm already 3.5 stars out of 5. But then when it's great and it makes me feel things and it just takes you on this really fun journey, it's such a great ride for me as a viewer. It's like everything that I love about genre storytelling. And it's Noah Segan's Blood Relatives, also a directorial debut.
I still haven't seen this and I feel terrible about that.
You really should, actually.
It's on Shudder. I know I need to watch it.
I think you're going to love it, honestly. Yeah. It's such a sweet story about, like, so basically in the movie, and I'm not giving anything away, but like Noah plays like this older, like, Yiddish vampire who's kind of like, he's just a loner. He's just been the way he is for years and years and years, comes to find out that he has a daughter who's trying to figure out like her own sort of vampirism. And it's just so delightful. It's like this back and forth of like finding your family and figuring out like how to like navigate that in this world. And like, it's so good. It's like so good. And it was just one of those, like, I knew it was going to be fun, but like, I genuinely, like, my heart felt like it grew after it was over. And a lot of people, like, I think have made comparisons to Near Dark. And I think in some ways there's definitely some connective tissue, but it doesn't have sort of the nihilism of Near Dark.
Sure.
It's just a really good, sweet story that's funny and thoughtful and just a hell of a good time. Like, I really loved it. And if you haven't seen, you know, if you're like Patrick and you haven't seen it yet on Shudder, I highly recommend it. It came out like around Thanksgiving. It felt like the perfect movie to watch with family, because even the tagline is like, family sucks.
Right.
So it's great. It's such a wonderfully sweet movie. And I really hope that this leads to more of Noah sort of behind the scenes. Like, I love seeing him in front of the camera. He was probably my favorite part of Glass Onion. But like, just seeing him be able to kind of step out and do something different and, you know, take the reins as a director, like, it's good stuff. It really, really is.
It played for one day at the Music Box in Chicago. Noah Segan was there. I wasn't able to go. And then the timing of its release happened to coincide with, like, you know, screener season and voting and all that stuff. So unfortunately,
and
I had
Thanksgiving
to...
and everything. So it was, yeah.
So there's a bunch of nonsense I had to watch before I could get to Blood Relatives, but its placement on your list has moved it to the top of my must-see list.
I think you will enjoy it.
Yeah, I like a horror movie that's, like, nice.
Yeah, that's the thing. It was just, like, one of those, like, yeah, look, I like the mean stuff, too. I like when things get a little gritty. I like, you know, sort of, you know, get a little nasty and dirty. That's what horror can be. But, like, sometimes I just want to smile, you know? Yeah. And that's what this gave me.
Nice. All right.
So what's your number 7?
My number 7 is Deadstream.
Interesting. That is on my that's on my alternate list.
Okay. My guess is you saw way more horror movies than me in 2022. So there may be a bunch of stuff that you're like, why would you put that on your list when this movie exists?
No, not at all, because I think Deadstream is like, look, I will say 15 minutes into that movie, I was like, I am going to hate this.
Me too. I had the exact same reaction.
And then 30 minutes in, I was like, oh my God, I love this.
Yeah.
And what Joseph and Vanessa Winter are able to do in this film is like amazing. Like, just the way that they're able to sort of like defy your expectations.
Yeah.
And like make this character who isn't likable, but yet still completely engaging.
Yeah.
And then you sort of sympathize with them, but then it's a great, like, fun little back and forth, I think, that they have with the audience in this.
There were a couple, like, influencer horror movies that came out this year. What was the other one that was on Shudder? Oh, darn it. It's like a girl's name.
Oh, gosh. I know what you're talking about, and I can't think of it.
Okay, I can't either. But anyway, yeah, I put on Deadstream because I had heard good things, and it starts, and I'm kind of like, what? I don't know if I can do this. Because I found the character to be not, I mean, unlikable, yes, but mostly like maybe irritating.
Just a bit much.
Yeah. And I guess I just didn't appreciate the fact that that was the point, because the longer the movie went on, the more I was like, oh, I see what they're doing and I'm into it. He ends up being really, really funny, you know, sort of mocking. Sissy, by the way, was the other movie.
Oh, yes, Sissy. Sorry, yes.
And Sissy's good, but it's kind of another influencer horror movie. And this is, you know, specifically like YouTuber influencer, a guy who's live streaming his experience in a haunted house, basically. And it kind of does Evil Dead 2 by way of found footage. And I think part of it, you know, part of it was the found footage thing was putting me off. And then I started to appreciate everything that they were doing with that aesthetic. It's really funny. The characterization is great. The gags are really funny. Like, once it goes full tilt horror, I was like, oh, I haven't seen a movie do this in a long time. This kind of splatstick horror. I just thought it was so entertaining and fun. I had to put it on my list.
I'm full on board. And yeah, like, that's the thing. It's like, also too, is like, my hope was like, we didn't get on this call and it's like just us rehashing the same 10 movies back and forth.
Right.
So variety's good. I'm happy. And like I said, it's on my alternate list. Okay. So yeah.
I like when we have totally different lists. I know once we get near the top, our lists are going to look very similar.
Probably.
At least the one and two. But maybe I'm wrong. You could totally surprise me and put The Invitation at number one.
Oh, spoiler alert. Thanks.
I haven't seen it yet. It's on Netflix. I actually haven't either. I mean to watch it.
Yeah, I got the Blu-ray to check out, and I just haven't had a chance yet. So
does the Blu-ray
I want to watch it. I'm in for trashy vampire sexiness all day long. So I'm gonna watch it. I just haven't had a chance yet.
Does the Blu-ray have an unrated cut?
It does. Yeah.
Okay. I don't know if it's, you know, I don't know if the PG-13 one was toned down or not. I'm just, that was part of what kept me away, was that I was like, oh, this movie isn't gonna like go for it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, so that's my seven. We're at your six.
All right. So my six is also a film that's a feature film debut. There's a lot of great first-time directors out there that did some cool shit this year. And so my number six pick is Parker Finn's Smile.
Oh, okay. Yeah, go for it.
Yeah. Look, I watched this movie three times now.
Holy cow.
Yes. And I have to say, like, as much as it's creepy, it's unsettling at times. It's really effective with how it approaches like the scares. It's super dark in places, like in ways that I was not like, I was like, oh, you're a studio movie. You're not supposed to kind of do this stuff. But it doesn't pull any punches in that regard. And I think Sosie Bacon gives one of the best performances in horror this year.
She's
great. Because there's like, it's one of those things where like, the first time I watched it, I liked her performance. And then the second time I watched it, and I really saw this, it was almost the stuff that she wasn't doing in certain scenes. But I was like, it just kind of floored me, the nuance. And I think also too, there's just something when you've been a person who like, you're trying to explain to people, but like, you have to constantly apologize for who you are.
Mm-hmm.
That I really related to, because I've experienced that so much in my life. Like, I'm just like, I just think that her character, Rose, was just somebody that I really related to in a lot of ways. And frankly, I literally would have watched five more movies of Rose and Joel, like just solving crimes and shit together. Because her and Kyle Gallner are fantastic together. And kudos to Kyle Gallner. Like, that's not an easy movie to come in and like sort of steal the show, but he's phenomenal in it. And it just made me realize, I'm like, you should have been used more. We needed more of you in another movie that's on my list.
Yeah. Yeah. He's definitely kind of, at least compared to how he's been used in recent years, I felt like Smile cast him against type, and he's really good in it.
Yeah. And I think also too, there was a lot of folks that sort of had a little bit of backlash about this movie and like, trying to say how it like, you know, villainizes mental health and stuff. And I actually think the opposite. I think it shows how mental health, you know, regardless of how much good work you can do, that just it's really tough to kind of pull through some of that stuff sometimes. And the balance that like, you know, that Rose has to find in her life, where she wants to help people, but she's had her own traumas that she's had to work through. And, you know, she's used those traumas for so long to motivate her. But like, what happens when like the trauma is just something you can't escape?
Yeah.
And I think to me that's almost the perfect depiction of mental health, because, you know, for some people, no matter how much work you do and how much therapy you go through, it's still a lot, you know?
Yeah.
And I think there's so many depictions of it where everyone's like, well, just go talk to a therapist and you'll be fine. But for some people, you aren't.
Right.
And it's always going to be a battle. And I think for me, the fact that it puts it on that level of saying like, it, for some people, it's always going to be work and it's always going to be hard. And that's okay. Like, for me, that was like, it says a lot, but it's still really entertaining too.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I think I'm maybe a little burned out on like horror as metaphor for trauma. And so I think I was bringing some of my own bullshit to Smile. It's definitely like one of the best directed horror movies of the year. And I thought Sosie Bacon was great. I love that it's like one of the big, we had a few like really cool success stories in horror this year. And this is one of them, where it was like this movie that was just going to go to Peacock or something, and then they were like, well, let's try and put it in theaters. And it goes on to make like $100 million and hopefully gives a career to Parker Finn. So I'm so glad that it's on your list.
Thank you. Yeah, I was, and I have to say also too, one of my favorite things was when I did the junket for it at Fantastic Fest, and I'd already talked to Sozzie and Parker for the movie for the winter fall issue of Fangoria.
Okay.
But when I came in, it was funny because like the first time I saw the movie, like I just knew I really liked this actress. It didn't dawn on me who her parents were.
Right,
I really
right.
didn't until about 2 minutes before I got on the phone with her. Talked to her for that magazine article, and I was like, oh, holy shit, she's the Tremors baby. Because there's like this famous picture of Kira Sedgwick on the set of Tremors, super pregnant.
Oh, no kidding.
And that's her. Because we figured out the timing and everything.
Right.
And so I go into the junket, and Sozzie was just like, oh my God, it's you, and blah, blah, blah. And apparently she talked me up to Angel from Fangoria on the flight, which was like crazy.
This is why you're like, a celebrated author.
But she was like, you know, she's like, one of the things like I just really appreciated was she's like, you didn't make the interview about like who my family is or anything.
Yeah.
And she was just like, we just had a really awesome conversation and stuff. And I was just like, oh wow, thank you. So anytime like I can get like actually like complimented for like my interview, I was like, oh my God, I'm gonna cry. But I saved that little clip in my repertoire. I didn't release it in my video that I did to support the release of the movie, but I have it saved on the side because it just made me happy. So but yeah, and then at the end I freaked out. I was like, oh my God, Kevin Bacon's probably gonna read this. So that was weird.
As soon as she said all that, you should have made the interview entirely about her parents.
Right? Be like, what do you think your dad thinks of this movie? I mean, and he had his
like
own
having
movie
the closer for a mom. He did. It was not great, but he was great in it.
Yes, yes. I will agree with that. Yes.
Where are we at?
We are at six.
My six. Okay, so my six is a movie that I saw, I want to say, at Fantasia in 2020, or for Fantasia. I didn't go to Fantasia. In 2021, and wanted to put on my list last year, but it didn't get released, and then it finally got picked up by Shudder and put out this year, so I knew it had to be on my list, and that is Hellbender.
That is also on my alternate list.
See, it's a good year.
Oh my God, it was so, it was such a rough year, man. tears were shed.
It's a good problem to have.
It is, it really is. We're lucky.
I thought this was like a kick-ass movie just about a mother and daughter who are witches. The daughter is sort of coming of age, discovering who she is, how much power she has. They play in a band together. The songs are awesome. The visuals are great. Like, there's all this stuff, and I loved the movie when I saw it. And then I learned a little bit about like the making of it, mm-hmm. and how it's this Addams Family film, and how they write and direct and shoot and edit and write the music and star and basically do every single thing, this one family. And I just thought that was so like lovely and cool. It made me like this movie even more.
It's funny because I'm sure most people learned it from watching The Last Drive-In, which is cool and stuff. But like, I'll just put it out there that some of us chronicled all this back in 2021 when we interviewed the family, Addams Family, if you will, minus the double D, during Fantasia that year. And I adore these folks so much. Like, Toby is like, she's, I still feel like I'm like growing up. I'm like, she's the kind of person I want to be when I grow up. Because she's so badass and assured and so like just unique. Like, she has such a unique energy. And like, Zelda is just this really like phenomenal young actress. And John, of course, like, is great as well. Like, it's just like, I don't know of like, I'm trying to think of like other families that have worked together like this. And I can't really think of any. Like, I know that there are some families,
like, yeah, exactly,
but that work so cohesively like they have throughout the movie, you know, because they did this. I cannot believe that I'm totally blanking on that really badass movie.
This is the only movie of theirs I think that I've seen. Hold on, I'm looking it up.
Oh, The Deeper You Dig is actually really good too.
Okay, yeah, I didn't see
that. That's what I was thinking of. If you haven't seen that, I highly recommend it. I do think Hellbender is the better movie of the two, but there's some really good stuff in there, and it's like you can kind of see like the start of this Addams Trio really getting their groove. But yeah, Hellbender Rules, and that soundtrack
My gosh, it's so
phenomenal.
Good, and the fact that they like write and perform all the music themselves. I missed that last drive-in show, so
it's really worth going back and rewatching, honestly, because he brings them all out and stuff, and they're
oh
great.
For real?
Yeah, it's super fun.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah, okay. it's a good time.
Yeah, I really, really like this movie, and this more than I think any other movie on my list felt like a real discovery, again, because I hadn't seen any of the other Addams films, and so I was like, who are these people? How did they do this? And now I can't wait to see what they do next.
Absolutely. And I think they already have a movie done.
I think you're right, according to IMDb.
So I would guess soon we'll probably be hearing some festival news. Is what I would
something
I would
called
guess.
Milltown, maybe? Does that sound right?
I think so, yes.
No,
because I
just
follow
kidding.
Them on Twitter. No.
They act in it, but it doesn't look like they're directing it. Hold on. I hate the new IMDb layout so much. Hellbender might be the last thing that they have directed right now. They're starring, I think, in something called Milltown. But
oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
I feel like I saw them say on Twitter, though, that they were working on something. So they might be, like, they might have just filmed it or something.
Sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, everything's like a blur. I don't know. I'm not sure how it's even January right now, to be very honest.
It makes no sense.
It does not at all. I'm like, I'm still waiting to like get a redo on Christmas just because it went too fast. So
yes, and I was sick, so I would like a redo, please.
Oh, redos for everybody.
Yes. All right, we are in the top five now. This is very important.
It is.
This is rarefied air. Top five on the FSMovie Best Horror of 2022 list. This is what really every filmmaker strives for.
It really does. It's the pinnacle. We are the pinnacle, Patrick. So yeah, my number five is a movie that I actually thought you were gonna love more than I think you did. Which I was really shocked about. I was just like, wait, what? But it's a movie I've watched a handful of times now, and it's also a movie I showed to Brian, because it's one of those, like, I know movies he'll probably dig and that he won't. And this actually became one of his favorite movies of 2022, which made me so happy. But it is Chloe Okuno's Watcher.
Oh, yes.
I was so shocked because I was like, oh, this is so your bag. I was like, you wear De Palma t-shirts. This has got to be your thing. And it's totally fine that it isn't. Like, it's totally cool. But like, to me, this movie, like, the way that it plays with you, and I think that's for me one, because everybody was like, oh, it's so Hitchcockian, which whatever, the word Hitchcockian just makes me laugh. And to me, it felt like early De Palma, but of course, early De Palma is riffing on Hitchcock,
right?
So six of one, half dozen of the other. But it really, like, the way that it sets it up, that like you spend 90% of this movie not knowing whether or not like everything really is in her head. Is she just being paranoid?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is she just overreacting to certain things? Like, I get it. I get that. And I don't know, maybe if it's like, cause I spent a lot of like early 2022 just being frustrated as a woman or something, where I'm just like, I'm like, I totally get this. And I just think Makeham Monroe is like phenomenal in this. And then the guy who's sort of the guy in this, right. And his name is Bern Gorman, and I don't know much about him because I think he's just a overseas actor mostly.
Okay.
Like, he's so wonderfully creepy in such subtle ways here, where like that sequence on the subway to me is one of my favorite things of this year, because it's so wonderfully confrontational, but so freaking unsettling. And like, I just think that there's so much greatness in this movie, like in terms of the way that like the shots are framed and like the tension, the atmosphere, and just the final look in the movie when Julia looks at her husband. And that's all I'm saying, so I don't want to ruin it for anybody.
Right.
Where I'm just like, if you could sum up like the female experience, like it's so in that look. It's just phenomenal. And I loved my sort of scene stealer was Madalena Ania, who plays Irina, the neighbor for Julia. And they have a really great friendship in this as well. It's just, it was phenomenal. I loved it. And again, first time feature filmmaker, because of
Right.
course, Chloe had worked on VHS 96, 99. Which one was the one last year?
One of the
She did.
VHSs.
It's yeah. It was 96 because she did the Hail Rama.
Oh, she did. Oh, I don't even. I did not even put that together.
Yeah, she's Hail Rama. So
Ratma
yeah,
is the best.
Ratma rules. Hail Rama.
Ratma does totally fucking rule.
Hail Rama. But yeah, like this made me really excited for her career. I think she just got announced for something really fascinating, and I'm trying to see if I can find it on my list of like upcoming stuff, but I don't see.
She's
It was
doing.
VHS 94, by the way. I had 96 in my head,
That's
and
okay. It was 94. She's doing an episode of the Let the Right One In TV show.
yes, she did. Yeah, I think that show
Okay.
already came and
Oh,
went.
it did. Shit.
It's like Showtime or something like that. I don't have time to
Oh,
watch
God.
Showtime.
I don't have time to watch shows, period.
It was a really rough year to keep up with TV, and it was great.
Yes.
Like there's
There's too
so
many
much amazing stuff.
movies.
I know. There's so much of everything. But anyway, I love Watcher. It's on Shudder right now for anybody.
Yeah.
It's funny too because we have Sling, and so we always, because we spent a lot of time watching AMC between like Halloween and Christmas. And so we always get the AMC Plus commercial, and it was always for Watcher. And I mean, when I've been watching this commercial for probably like 5 months, and it's just like we literally quote it in our house. We're like, it was a decapitation. So we literally, it's become such a part of our house these days. But yeah, I loved it so much, and it's fantastic filmmaking.
It really is. It's super well made. I have no objections. Like I know I it's not on my list and I have disappointed you by not putting it on my list. But hey, I'm glad it's on your list. I'm glad we get to talk about it because I definitely watching it was so appreciating the filmmaking behind it. I think it's so well made. And I do kind of love where it lands, and obviously I won't say where it lands, but you kind of alluded to that final shot. I think it's a movie with a lot of really cool things to say, but again, it doesn't like hit you over the head with it the way I think there's a handful of other movies this year that kind of have.
Yeah.
It's interesting to watch horror movies work through some of the themes that mainstream movies are not that horror isn't mainstream, but you know what I mean. Non-horror movies are trying to cover this year, in a much less obvious and much more interesting way.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
All
all
right.
right,
So
you ready to kick off your top five?
my five was your nine, I believe, and that
A
is
Wounded
Travis
Fawn.
Stevens' A Wounded Fawn. I was a big fan of Jacob's Wife. I think it was my number one of 2 years ago, whatever year that movie came out.
I think that was last year.
Was it really?
I think it was. I know time
Listen,
means nothing anymore.
time is a flat circle. I liked the CM Punk one. I thought Jacob's Wife was a big step forward. I think A Wounded Fawn is an even bigger step forward. It was really cool to see him working with his partner again. I think Sarah Lind is great in this movie. I think if it wasn't for another movie on my list, this would definitely have like my absolute favorite credit sequence in any movie this year.
Yes.
Josh Rubin rules in this movie.
Oh my God, does he?
I don't know. I was like reading about it as he was making it and as it was first playing festivals, and there was a lot of talk about like Greek tragedy and hallucinatory, and there were all these words thrown around that I was like, ah, fuck, this movie is not going to be for me. Like, this is going to be
Which
Travis
is funny because
Stevens
as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, Patrick will dig the shit out of this.
for sure. Yes, but
Yeah.
like going into it, I just was like, oh, this is going to be him being like super experimental, and I'm not going to dig this. And man, do I fucking love it. It is so good. Watching, you know, obviously I could watch so much more of Josh Rubin and Sarah Lind just doing what they do in this movie. And I love that, you know, there's a halfway point where you think one thing and then the movie completely pivots and does something else. And again, if you're not in love with it by the end credits, I can't imagine that not winning you over.
And it's one of those things that, like, you know, you're talking about like critics voting and stuff like that. Cause I was on, like, I was on our horror committee for our group.
Sure.
And it was just like one of those things where, like, you know, nobody else saw it in our group that did like the short list for the horror movies.
Very,
and I was like,
unfortunate.
It really is. And it's, I'm just like, how did you guys not watch this movie? And the fact that it didn't even make our short list pissed me off so
yes.
much. Where I was just like, how did you guys not watch this? Like, yeah. So yeah, I'm really glad that you had it on your list too. But yeah, as soon as I got through with it and I saw those end credits, I was just like, oh yeah. I was like, this is not only is this making my top list for the year, I'm like, I know Patrick's gonna dig the
yes.
hell out of this too. And it's like, I think he shot on 16 too, didn't he?
He did, yeah.
Yeah.
I doubled this with another recent horror movie also shot on 16 in the same night, and I really liked one and wasn't crazy about the other.
I did not see the other yet, which bums me out.
No, you're fine.
Okay, but I'm gonna get there. But I just I just didn't get a chance to get to that one yet.
It's been very cool watching Travis Stevens go from like producer of really cool movies to now writer director of really cool movies.
Absolutely.
And I get very excited every time he has a new movie announced.
I wholeheartedly agree.
Yeah.
Team Travis,
right.
Yay.
Team Travis. We've been Team Travis for a long time.
Yes, we certainly have.
Number 4.
I think you're going to be shocked that this isn't higher on my list.
Oh, boy. It's going to be higher on mine then.
No, I don't think so, because I think you already talked about this, but this is Scream 2022.
Oh, okay. No, that's fine. That was my 10. I feel like 4 is a good spot for it.
Okay, okay. Again, a movie that I've watched a lot this year. I didn't expect... Look, we know how I feel about the Scream movies. I didn't know how to feel going into it. I was really... there was a lot of trepidation. And I think beyond what I thought should have been the plot, because of course I know best. And we talked about that on our episode where we discussed Scream 2022 for Corpse Club.
Which I literally have no memory of recording, for the record.
Yeah, we did. It was, well, I mean, it was like last January.
Good Lord.
It was like almost a year ago. If you could believe that. But I think, despite my own preconceived notions and expectations, I think it surpassed them in so many ways. And I just, it's so great to see Wes's legacy getting carried forward by people who clearly get it, who clearly understood what fans want out of Scream movies. And the more that I watched it, the more I picked up on some homages to like other things and things like that. But yeah, I freaking loved Scream. Like, I really did. It's probably the movie I saw the most on my list in theaters. Because I saw it like several times at the drive-in and everything. And I've watched it several times at home. I still get very weepy when I think about Dewey.
Yeah.
And again, we're like a year removed. And I'm just like, okay. I mean, I'm okay with it. Because like, we just can't keep doing the same thing where everybody
right.
keeps surviving. But...
Right. Although I'm not a believer in like we have to kill legacy characters for dramatic stakes.
Yeah. So it's there are aspects of it, like the more that I watched it, where I was like, I don't know if I love this as much now, because now it's really ingrained in me as a fan. But I think on any other given year, this would have been my number one.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's Scream, baby.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know anybody who loves the Scream franchise more than you. So again, I'm not surprised.
Well, everybody on Twitter says that they do. So I don't even say it anymore, but I'm just like, no, you're wrong.
I know. I know the truth. I know what's real. I had it at 10, which honestly surprised me, because I came out of it last January kind of like, yeah, that was okay. And as the year went on, I kind of liked it more. I've revisited it more than once, which is not true of some other horror movies that maybe I should like more. And there's still stuff I'm not crazy about. But I just realized I like being back in this universe a lot. And I think the Radio Silence guys did a good job of like putting us back in that universe. Not all the screenplay stuff works for me. I kind of don't care. I just was happy to be back in another good Scream movie.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm so in for six.
Yeah, like, I haven't watched that trailer, but I did see people on Twitter just like pointing out Easter eggs, and like, I'm already exhausted. I'm just like, is that what going
to
be?
Oh,
what
I don't have time
is?
To do Easter eggs and stuff like that. But like, just being on the subway, that subway sequence, I'm like, yeah, I'm in. And I want to see Jason like coming down from like a different train, and then like Jason and Ghostface meeting, and they're like, what's up? And then they just cross paths and keep on their little murderous ways. Yeah.
Nice. I like it. Yeah. I like that they're doing something kind of radically different, you know, like,
yeah.
And this kicked off the year of Jenna Ortega, which I am in support of.
Yeah, I am too. I'm guessing she's probably going to show up some more in our list.
Studio 666 is my number one.
Oh my God. Her showing up and that was so rare. I was like, wait, what?
Yeah, that was kind of weird. But again, just great to have her in another horror movie.
Yeah, she basically owned horror in 2022 between all the movies she did and Wednesday. And
yes, my daughter's new obsession is
that makes me so
Wednesday.
Happy.
Oh, does she love it? And I'm just happy that she walks around singing Goo Goo Muck, because I'm like, you know, that's from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre too. And she hasn't asked to watch that yet, but I'm just excited that that song is back in the public consciousness.
Fantastic. we're all winners.
That's right.
For 2022.
All right.
So what's your number four?
My four is a movie that I'm guessing is not on your list, and that is, I think, the biggest horror success story of the year.
Yeah, it's not on my list.
Damien Leone's Terrifier 2. I am very surprised that I enjoyed this movie as much as I did, because I was real mixed on the original Terrifier. I have watched it a few times, and this most recent one, I kind of had to be like, all right, except for that one scene, I kind of like this movie. So I was trepidatious going into part two, but I thought it was just really fun in like a crazy way. I appreciate how big it was. I think bringing in Lauren Rivera to actually play a character you could give a shit about, to be a worthy final girl, was a masterstroke. I think it makes all the difference. Obviously, it's too long. Everybody says it's too long. Doesn't need to be like 2 hours and 15 minutes or 2 hours and 20 minutes, whatever the fuck it is. But I enjoyed the scale of it. I think I'm excited for a Terrifier 3, which is something I never thought I would say. But I just really enjoyed the hell out of this movie.
Yeah, it's funny because like I hated the first Terrifier.
Understandably.
And I actually think I said that when I interviewed Damien at Fantastic Fest. Yeah. I was just like, yeah, I can't lie. It's whatever. But I was really surprised by Terrifier 2. I think that they took something that was like, for some people, they were just in it for art. And they took it in and changed it into something where you actually gave a shit about everything.
Right.
I also think that David Howard Thornton, I think that's his name.
That is his name.
I think his performance as art is just on another level, especially for a character that doesn't talk and the way that he just leans into everything. It's funny for a movie that's over 2 hours like this, like, it didn't even feel that long to me. I mean, I will completely be honest and just say that probably one of my biggest reservations about it is like, it's just hard for me to root for a movie that involves somebody who actively spent years trying to destroy my career. That's just where I'm at. you know what I mean?
Sure. I didn't.
And I'm not.
I completely forgot about that aspect of it, honestly.
Yeah. And I mean, how it's kind of hard to when they're taking all the credit for it on Twitter.
Well, I did see that at the time, but when I was making my list, I wasn't like, oh.
Yeah, no, it's fine. And that's the thing. I'm never going to discount what Damien and his team were able to create in this movie, because it's great. And again, you know, here's the thing though. Like, I went into this movie wanting to hate it. I will be totally honest that I was a petty bitch going into this movie, and I really enjoyed it. I think Lauren is fantastic. Like,
Yeah, she really is.
it's, you know, it just, it really, it leans into creating a real world and real characters and things that you can invest in as fans. And like, even the scenes where people probably thought it took too long to do things, I didn't mind. Like the whole sequence at the costume shop, like was, or is it a costume shop? It was costume.
Yeah.
It was like a,
Yeah.
yeah. And it was just like, I could have watched another 10 minutes of that back and forth. Like,
Yeah.
it was great. And again, it's all credit to David and his performance. And then the little ghoul girl is like,
She's
comes in
really
and
cool.
steals this show out of nowhere. And I was just like, yeah. So, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I wanted to go into this movie being like, screw you. And like, I walked away. I was like, that was really fun.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those, like, it played midnight at Fantastic Fest. It's not a movie I want to be up at midnight watching, because honestly, I'm old.
Sure.
And doing a 2.5 hour movie or whatever it is at midnight, I'm too old for this stuff now. You know, but yeah, it was the biggest surprise. And honestly, for me, as somebody who has spent my entire career rooting for independent horror, to see the successes that this movie was able to garner
Yes.
Is fantastic. And again, too, because Damien and I forget the name of his producer, I mean, they did all the effects themselves.
Right.
Because again, they had an effects team that they brought in for this one that fell through. So they had to step up once again and do all the effects themselves. It's phenomenal. So yeah, like, and that's the thing too. Like, I was kind of expecting at the beginning with like the stuff at the house with the mom, and I was just like, oh, this is feeling a little rough, but then it sort of settles in.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, okay. Yeah. So yeah, I think it's great. I knew it was going to be on the list, and that's totally cool. But yeah, it's just one of those, I'm still working through my issues. What can I say?
I told this story on our Best of the Year episode, but I had tickets to see it the one night it was supposed to screen. It was going to screen on like a Thursday night as like a Fathom event. And I was going to go. And then I got a screener for it. So I canceled my ticket because I was like, well, it's going to be me and six other people who saw the first Terrifier. And I don't need to go. And I'm so mad that I canceled my ticket, A, because I didn't get to see it on a big screen, and B, because I think that screening would have been a party given what happened with this movie's release. It was so great to see it week after week, just adding screens, adding showtimes, racking up box office. Like, as an independent, unrated horror movie, it is the success story of the year. And producer aside, obviously I'm somebody with like ties to Bloody Disgusting, and so to see them having a success was also pretty cool, because I think if it had been the first Terrifier, I would have been much less invested given who distributed that movie. But I'm excited for Terrifier 3.
Yeah, I will watch. I'm there.
Yeah.
I'm in. And again, I think it's all credit to David and Lauren as well. But like, David just like, look, I'm not going to be as hyperbolic and say like it's on the level of like Charlie Chaplin or Buster Keaton. But
do people say that?
No, but I think there's something that's really, his performance is sort of this unsung art of like silent comedy.
Yeah.
In physicality,
yeah,
that you don't see anymore,
right?
Like, you just don't, because it's not like Leatherface is doing the stuff that he's doing. It's not like Jason does the stuff that he's doing, and it really harkens back to like that golden age of cinema, in some really surprising ways. And I honestly think like that was what won me over, was really because like you get a bit of it in the first Terrifier, but it just feels like it so lays into it in the sequel.
Definitely.
Yeah,
it's cool to
definitely.
See them. It's cool to see the both he and Lauren Lavera becoming like
horror icons
in the span of one movie, and they're like selling out conventions, and like, they've come by it honestly. It's not this thing that's been manufactured and sold to us.
No,
this
yeah,
is an
totally.
Actual like grassroots effort that the audience discovered and was built for and is embracing. You know.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
Top three, baby.
Oh, here we go.
This is where our list will split a little, but I do think two of our top three are going to be the same.
I think so. I have a sneaking suspicion.
Yeah.
So my number three is my favorite movie I saw at a Fantastic Fest.
Okay.
And it's a movie that has just really stuck with me since. And it's Luca Guadagnino's Bones and All.
Yes, absolutely. So I just, full disclosure, put this on my
mainstream list?
Favorites of the year list.
Okay.
But could have easily been, obviously, on a horror list as well. This movie is amazing.
Yeah, it's one of those, like, my girl Taylor Russell, who I love from the Escape Room movies.
Sure.
Like, getting to see what she does in this movie, like, oh my God, it's like another level. And, like, I'm going to be really honest, and I'll probably get some hate for this, and it's totally okay. I've never really fully connected with Timothée Chalamet. I just haven't. Like, I liked his previous collaborations with Luca. Like, I, you know, Call Me By Your Name is a movie I kind of still feel creepy about. And this is pre all the stuff that came out about a certain star of that movie.
Right.
I thought it was extremely well made, but I just felt there was like this weirdness to it. And I don't know, that's just me. I've never kind of fallen into the camp of Timothée Chalamet. This movie, I got it. I totally got it.
Yeah.
I saw what everybody's been seeing. I'm not a Dune person, so don't kill me. But I get it now. Like, I totally get it now. In this movie, like, there's something about Luca's work where he can lean into the most horrifically, terrible things ever and leave me a sobbing mess. And he did it with Suspiria, and he does it here. And I loved so much about this movie. The score from Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross is phenomenal, and it's criminal that it's getting overlooked. I know they've got a couple other ones out there this year that are getting more attention. That's fine, as long as they're getting love. but this movie to me just feels so incredibly special. I feel like it's been really slept on.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
Yeah, for sure.
That the Suspiria remake like kind of made a lot of ripples. And so that's been a little bit of a bummer. I'm like, oh, I wish, but it's like, it just had a weird release. Like it needed better support because this movie is phenomenal and it wrecked me in all the best possible ways. And I also think Mark Rylance is one of the best villains we got this year.
So this is maybe controversial to say, the Mark Rylance performance, for whatever reason, is like the one thing in the movie that didn't work for me.
Oh my gosh. You know what? The first time I watched it, I felt like that. Second time I was like, oh God. Okay.
I need to watch it a second time. Cause the first time I watched it, I was like, everybody's doing like this naturalistic thing. And then he's in here acting and I need to see it again.
But I think that was like him putting on airs like that. Cause that's just kind of like what Sully is at this point in his life, where his existence as this kind of being is almost like a performance. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
Where he thinks that's how he should be with people. I don't want to say too much, but
right.
I agree with you. The first time I saw it, I felt like it was like, oh, it was a step too high in comparison. But then the second I was like, oh, okay, got it. It took me a little while to settle into it. So I get it if it doesn't totally click.
I was happy because I'm somebody who admired and or appreciated both Suspiria and Call Me By Your Name without like fully embracing the two. And I feel like Bones and All kind of married the two things that I loved about both of those movies into one movie. And I was like, oh, here's a Luca Guadagnino movie that I can like fully embrace finally. And it felt good to do that.
Bones and All. You embraced it, Bones and All.
I sure did.
And that's the thing too, like Taylor, like for me, she ended up being like my favorite part of the first Escape Room. And of course she's great in the second one.
Do I need to see Escape Room 2?
I think it's better than people gave it credit for, to be honest.
Okay.
I really do. I think it's fun, you know? And then she was in Waves.
Yes, she was very good in Waves. Yeah.
And that's a movie that I struggled with because it was just like one of those that like you're watching one movie and then it shifts to a second movie.
Yes.
And I was just like, wait, what's like, whoa, hold up. But she's so good in it.
Yes.
And I love that she's getting on more people's radar because she deserves it. She deserves every little bit of praise that she gets. She's just a phenomenal, great, like young up and coming talent in this industry. She's very raw. I don't know how to explain it.
Sure. This is the movie, I think, and I might have said this when I put it on my other list, but I think this is the movie that horror fans are going to be discovering over the next 5 to 10 years and being like, holy shit, why did I sleep on this? Because it's so good.
Yeah, and I think also too, it's just a different kind of beast in terms of horror. Like, it's not traditional horror. It's not like a bunch of kids going to like a house and hanging out. You know what I mean? Like, it's different. And I think it's one of those, like, again, I think a lot of people sort of compared a lot of this to like Near Dark, where like they're on the road a lot and it's very sort of just natural performances and things like that, except for, you know, Bill Paxton, and that one is like crazy. Everything sort of got compared to Near Dark this year, which is interesting, because I'm like, are people discovering Near Dark?
They still are. Yeah,
but I think that's the thing. Like, Near Dark is a movie that I think took people a long time to sort of catch on to, and people are still catching on to it.
Yeah.
So I think this is a movie that is going to continue to grow in 10 years. And I think there's going to be a lot of folks that are going to be bummed out that they missed seeing this in like the moment.
Yeah, definitely.
And also, what a weird little cameo from David Gordon Green.
He had two weird cameos this year,
because
he shows
but
up in the
amazing
Nicolas Cage movie. Yeah,
it's funny that I loved his cameos more than I loved his movie.
Hey, I will second that.
Yeah. But I will say, I think my second and third viewings of Halloween Ends, I ended up appreciating it a lot more than I thought I would.
Yeah, I know I'm going to go back to it at some point. And again, knowing what to expect versus what you're hoping for is helpful on any second viewing. So I'm sure on my second view, I didn't even hate it, but I know that I'll like it more on repeat viewings.
Yeah. It's I highly recommend going back. I think once you can kind of separate yourself from those expectations, because we all had them. I mean, it's impossible to not.
I didn't even necessarily want like the ultimate showdown between Michael and Laurie. Like, that isn't what but I don't know what I wanted, but I just know that what he gave me was like, oh, I was not expecting that.
Yeah. It says Halloween 3.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. So what's your number 3?
My 3 is a movie that did not appear on your list at all. And that is Zach Cregger's Barbarian.
It's on my alternates list. Okay. And I'm shocked about that as much as anybody. I liked it, but
in a year where Ty West doesn't come back, this could have been my one, because I just had so much fun with it. And I missed it in theaters. I didn't catch up with it until HBO Max.
Same here.
I think, again, because of the timing of when it came out, I just couldn't get out to the theater to see it, even though I totally wanted to. I remember at Flashback, they were like giving away tickets to see it, and they kept showing the trailer, and I honestly was just not sold on it. I was like, that kind of looks like a piece of shit. And to see it come out and then to watch people on Twitter be like, holy shit, what a pleasant surprise. I didn't put it together that, you know, Zach Cregger, a comedy guy from Whitest Kids You Know, had written and directed it, which would have made, I'm not a Whitest Kids You Know guy, but like, it would have made me a lot more interested to see it, because to see, you know, Jordan Peele come from comedy to be one of the most acclaimed and celebrated horror filmmakers of our modern era. I'm not saying that Zach Cregger is the new Jordan Peele, but just bringing sort of comedy chops to horror is fascinating to me. And so we watched it on HBO Max, and to watch sort of the weird turns that it takes. I mean, there's a smash cut to Justin Long in a car that you're just like, wait, what?
Yeah.
It's just super fun and entertaining. I think Justin Long is incredible.
He's like horror's best douchebag this year.
He really is down. Between that and the House of Darkness, he really plays these unlikable parts in a way that is sort of likable. You enjoy watching him play such an asshole.
And the thing is, I've interviewed him a couple times in real life, and he's genuinely so freaking nice. In like,
I get that impression. Yeah, I don't think
so.
You
it's
could
like
play...
it's such a juxtaposition where I'm just like, whoa.
I don't think you could play such scumbags in such an entertaining way unless you are a good guy.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I love the moment where he's just like, maybe I'm a good person who did a bad thing. And of course, at that point, you don't quite know exactly what he's talking about.
Right.
And then like literally 90 seconds later, like he's doing the ultimate douchey thing ever.
Right.
And you're like, oh, okay. Yeah, I think for me, like, I liked how weird it got. I liked that it wasn't what I was expecting. I actually think it could have gone further. I don't know. For me, it was just like parts of that movie felt like stuff I had already sort of experienced in X-Files. So I kind of was like,
sure.
I knew it was going to, but there, of course, there is the feeding scene, which I'll leave very vague.
Yeah.
Where I was like, oh, okay. Wait, we're showing what? Oh, we're real. Okay. So that was a very big surprise. And I also just really liked Bill Skarsgård in it.
Me too. And I would have loved more of him in the movie, honestly.
Yeah. So yeah, it was on any other given year, this would have made my top 10.
Sure. That's how good a year it was.
It was. This year was tough. But I have a feeling our number two and number one are, I feel like we're both probably in sync with what our number two and number one is.
We might as well just talk about them together, because the only question I have is, what order will you place them in? And
yes,
you may have placed them in a different order than me, because honestly, I was surprised by where I put them.
Oh, okay.
But go ahead with your
number two,
and then we'll just come clean about our two and our one.
Okay, so my number two is X.
Okay.
And my number one is Pearl. Are you reversed?
That's kind of what I was expecting. And honestly, before I sat down to make this list, that's what I was expecting my order to be. And then when I sat down, I was like, I think if I'm being 100% honest with myself, the one I liked better and will watch more is X. So yeah, I'm flipped, but these movies are of a piece. I mean, there's no real separating them. So we're lucky to have both.
I completely agree. And honestly, if Pearl didn't have that monologue in it,
yeah,
it definitely would have been reversed.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Because I've watched X a lot more than I've watched Pearl. I've only seen Pearl twice. X, I think I've watched like five or six times, just because I've covered it in a lot of different facets this over 2022. So it was like,
right,
I had to kind of watch it a bunch.
Sure.
So it is the one that I'm more familiar with. But there's the audacity of Pearl to me, where like seeing that opening moments, and I was just like, Ty West, you madman, what are you doing? And also, I think it also worked out too, because I was taking a film class at the time, and we were just starting to talk about the golden age of cinema and talk about like the 1930s and stuff. And the timing was so perfect, where a lot of the stuff that he's referencing in this movie, I was actively studying. And so that made it so like in the moment for me. And I just think that that monologue that she has towards the end of the movie is just, I don't know that I breathe, like took a breath during the entire like 4.5 minutes or whatever it is. And then the shot at the end, which we've all like memed now, and I've memed it. Of Pearl just hanging on that moment where it's like, she's just like, I totally messed everything up, but everything's going to be okay, right? Because you're here and everything's going to be fine. And this isn't the life I want, but now I'm going to make the best of it. And you know where it leads.
Right. Well, that's the thing is, like, Pearl makes X even sadder.
Yeah. Where like these people have, she's been trapped at this farm.
Right.
For her entire life now.
Right.
She never got out. She never got to have her chance. She never got her Maxine moment. You know, like
you
at the end of X, like Maxine gets to like go and venture out into the world. Pearl never got that.
Right.
You know, and there's something inherently sad about that for anybody who's ever dreamed of something that they've wanted to achieve, but just haven't been able to do it. And then the dance sequence that just, again, harkened back to like all these old timey movies. I think also too, because I watch White Christmas a lot during the Christmas season, and like the scene of like her dancing with the soldiers just really reminded me of the opening of White Christmas, where they're performing in the middle of the war, and the way that they staged that just felt very reminiscent of that. Like, yeah, like any, like if Pearl didn't exist, X would be number one, but there's just such a completely shockingly weird factors that went into making Pearl
Right.
Like, I was just like, I can't believe you did this. Like, you're insane, Ty. What are you doing? And there's just
It's
such craftsmanship too, so.
the filmmaking in Pearl is incredible. The Mia, I mean, it really is the Mia Goth show. It is that performance. And I love, a horror movie that's like a character study. I love May, and I love the shit. There's another one that I was thinking of recently that functions in sort of the same way. Even something like Bill Lustig's Maniac is sort of a character
Yeah.
study. And I'm not necessarily comparing Pearl to Maniac, but there are comparisons to be made. I love how much he loves this character, even though she's a super fucked up killer. And I love Mia Goth's performance. And I love that, again, this was a year of all these great surprises, whether it was the success of Smile or the success of Terrifier 2, or the fact that there's a new Ty West movie and you go to see it. And if you stay through the credits, holy shit, there's going to be another new Ty West movie the same year, and it's going to be a prequel to X. And then you go see Pearl, and it's like, oh, by the way, me and Mia Goth made another movie called Maxine that's coming out in 2023. Like, as a Ty West
Some of us knew
fan,
about the prequel before
oh,
the
I
movie came out.
know. I know. Some of us were nice enough to share that information with some other people. But so, as a Ty West fan, as somebody who's been a Ty West fan for a lot of years, to see, like, oh, you're getting three new Ty West movies basically in the span of 12 months.
Do you feel
It,
spoiled, Patrick? Do you feel
yes,
spoiled?
yes. 2022, I think, spoiled so many of us. But I'm fascinated to see, like, people on Twitter talk about, like, oh, Pearl did nothing for me, or X did nothing for me, but I loved Pearl. And, the world is a rainbow and everybody can respond to whatever they want. But, like, I'm so happy that you, as my horror BFF, have these two movies at the top of your list because,
Yeah.
of course, they're at the top of mine too.
Yeah. And X, I think too, is just like, it's like, I love it. Like the landslide moment always gives me goosebumps.
Okay.
And it's such a beautiful moment in a movie like that's just hell is just waiting around the corner to break loose, right?
Right.
And he just stops the movie for this beautiful moment with Brittany Snow and Kid Cudi. And you're just like, what? And I'm not expecting to feel feelings like right now. Like this is just really nice. And Mia's a phenomenal in that movie because she's got two, like everybody in that movie is just aces. But like you got Mia Goth doing two performances, Jenna Ortega doing a fantastic job. But Brittany Snow to me, like, my
She's,
God,
yeah,
we
she
need
steals the
like
movie.
she's so like I'm so glad she got this because like we can just like pretend that she didn't have to deal with the Prom Night remake. And this is her horror calling card now.
Right. Well, I like Would You Rather, even though I know it's
Oh,
not
I did
like
like Would You Rather with
a
Jeffrey Combs,
flawless
right?
movie, but yeah, she's in that
Yeah.
movie.
Oh, I
And
actually really like that movie a lot.
yeah. So she
Nobody's
does have
ever.
another horror movie to fall back on, but yes, this
Yes.
is the one that I think people are going to point to and say, like, oh shit, Brittany Snow like owns this movie. And we even, though Mia Goth is giving these two great performances, I think Brittany Snow kind of steals it, because Brittany Snow to me is, she's not, I know, because Maxine is the heart of this movie. But to me, Brittany Snow is the heart of the movie because it's a movie about people who, like, are enjoying their lives and enjoying what they're doing, contrasted with, Pearl in her advanced age. And she's so envious of who these people are and their youth. And I'm not normally a fan of, like, old people are evil movies. I didn't love The Visit. It's fun in some ways, but, like, I think this movie finds a way to make it work in a way that I haven't really seen before. This sort of age gap horror. And everybody in it is so good. I love the sort of 70s aesthetic. I love even, what's his name? An actor that I haven't really liked in past movies. I want to say his name's Martin Donovan, but that's not right.
No, it's oh my gosh, why am I blanking?
Shit. Martin Donovan is somebody
Martin
else.
Henderson.
Martin Henderson, thank you. you know, he's been in stuff, and he was kind of a pretty boy that Hollywood tried to make a star in movies like Torque or whatever. But he's having such a good time in this movie.
He's good.
He's really good. You know, I think everybody in it is really, really good. And it does definitely, I think, tee up Jenna Ortega to have the rest of the year that she had. Yeah, I love both of these movies. Honestly, if I could just, I didn't want to be the guy who like tied them for first place.
I thought about it because I was like, well, I could definitely use another slot.
Right. Right, exactly.
I was like, I could cheat this.
Well, I'm glad that we both put them where we did, honestly, because I could see either one being one and two. And I like that they're both represented in different slots on our lists, even though they're basically tied for first.
Yeah.
Because they both are so great in different ways, you know? And I like that Ty West is smart enough and a courageous enough filmmaker to say, like, yes, I'm going to do a prequel to X, but I'm going to do it in a completely different style. I'm going to approach it in a completely different way. And I really want to give this incredible showcase to Mia Goth. And
yeah. And I've been singing her praises since Cure for Wellness. And of course, you know, we already mentioned the Suspiria remake, and she's fantastic in that too. So yay for Mia Goth.
Yay for Mia Goth. Yay for Ty West. Yay for 2022 horror.
Yeah, yay for us. We ate well.
Thank you. We did.
And that doesn't even include the other like 15 movies that I was like, there are movies that I was like, yeah, these could be potentially movies that like I would put on a list any other year.
So before we get to your also rans or your honorable mentions, let's recap your list 10 to 1 for people who might want to write stuff down.
Okay. And I could also send this to you too, if you want to post this on the site too. So number 10 was Orphan First Kill. Number 9 was A Wounded Fawn. Number 8 was Nope. Number 7 was Blood Relatives. Number 6 was Smile. Number 5 was Watcher. Number 4 was Scream 2022. Number 3 was Bones and All. Number 2 was X. And number 1 was Pearl.
Very nice. So we did cross over for half of our lists.
Okay.
My number 10 was Scream 2022. My number 9 was Orphan First Kill. My number 8 is Hatching. My number 7 is Deadstream. My number 6 is Hellbender. My number 5 is A Wounded Fawn. My number 4 is Terrifier 2. My number 3 is Barbarian. 2 is Pearl. And 1 is X.
Excellent.
Oh,
ooh!
Look at you doing what you do. All right. So what are some of your the movies that didn't make the list but could have made the list? I know you mentioned a few already. They were some of the ones that showed up on my list.
Yeah. So this is basically, and these are in no particular order, but these are movies that have definitely stayed with me since seeing them last year. And that's Speak No Evil, a movie that has haunted me.
Yeah, that's a rough
and
movie.
I swear to God, like I think about that movie once a week and I'm just like, Jesus Christ, that movie. It's my The Lodge of 2022, where it's gonna just completely eat away at me for the rest of my life. Barbarian was on my list.
Okay.
Hatching was on my list.
Nice.
I didn't put this on my list because I didn't feel like it was horror enough. And there was so many more pure horror movies. And I was just like, okay, I'm just going to put this on my alternate list. And that's The Menu, which I finally got to show Brian last night. And it became his favorite movie of 2022.
Very nice. Yeah, that movie is awesome.
Oh, my God. Because we watch a lot of Food Network stuff and we watch Hell's Kitchen. And just like the moment when Rafe calls Judith Light a donkey, because that's such a specific word that Gordon Ramsay uses all the time on Hell's Kitchen.
Okay.
Like I made the loudest noise I think I've ever made in a theater in my adult life when that happened, and everybody looked at me, and then it was like I was so sad that I wasn't watching it with Brian in that moment,
right?
Because I was like, he's gonna get it. And then last night we were watching it and it happened and he was like, oh my God, and he like freaked out, and I was like, I know. So I loved The Menu. Deadstream was another one on my list. Resurrection.
Nice.
Which features like a phenomenal performances from Rebecca Hall and Tim Roth. I also had Saloum on my list, which I haven't seen. So phenomenal. You're going to love it. It's a really fun genre bender. I had Mad God on my list.
Yeah.
I can't even believe I didn't even put this on here because it was really great, but I didn't. Prey was another one on my list.
Yeah. super fun, like reinvention sort of the Predator franchise, but that's how good this year was. It didn't make either of our lists.
Yeah. I had Bodies, Bodies, Bodies on my list.
Yeah.
Hellraiser 2022 was really fun. I wasn't expecting to enjoy it. I mean, I was expecting to enjoy it, but I wasn't expecting to enjoy it. I think like 20 minutes off that movie and it would have really soared for me.
Okay.
But I really, really liked it a lot. And I think they did some good stuff. Hellbender.
Yeah.
This is a movie you mentioned earlier when you were talking about Deadstream. Sissy was on my list.
Okay, yeah.
Another movie that I really enjoyed as well was another movie called Piggy, which is...
I haven't seen Piggy, and I wanted to see it before making this list, and I didn't get a chance to.
It's really, really good.
Yeah.
It's dark and gruesome.
Yeah, that was... I think that was why, because I was like, that seems very unpleasant, and I don't know if I'm in that headspace right now.
But it ends in a good place, like... That doesn't me saying that doesn't give anything away, but it's a really interesting one. I think it's worth seeing.
Okay.
For anybody. And then honestly, and I can't even believe I'm saying this, but it's a movie that since it came out, I've repeatedly thought about it, and I think it's a movie that people unfairly pooped upon. but I don't think it was nearly the shit show that people made it out to be, and that was the new Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Interesting.
And I'm not super precious about any of those movies past two. Like, yeah. I like them, but like, I think it's a movie that like in a few years, people are going to be like, you know, that really wasn't that bad. Like, I think it might be 2022 Scream 4.
Okay.
Because I mean, there's some shots in that movie that like are amongst some of the best camera work that I've seen out of 2022, to be really honest. And the scene in the party bus is like,
yeah,
holy crap.
That's certainly the most memorable sequence, you know, if you're a fan of gore.
Yeah. And I mean, not even that, just the atmosphere of it.
Sure.
It just looks so different than the aesthetic of Texas Chainsaw. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely.
Like, even when you look at the crazy technicolory wackadoo stuff that they were doing, like that Toby was doing in two, like it still is different, you know? My biggest gripe with that movie is just what they do with Marilyn
With
Sally Hardesty.
Agreed.
But take that point out, though, and I think you've got a really solid movie that says a lot about how people come into communities and take them over and, you know, basically screw up economies with their goodwill in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But the scene of, like, him holding the head at the end and, like, the sister screaming as the self-driving car is moving away, like, okay, I love that. Like, come on. I mean, that's the thing. Like, any other year, these movies could have made a spot on my list. It was tough.
It was tough. There was so much good stuff this year. And I'm excited about what we have to look forward to this year. I mean, I don't even necessarily know like a lot of the horror movies that are coming out. I just know we get Maxine this year, and that's enough for me.
Yeah. I'm like, anything else is gravy at this point.
Right. Well, yeah. Thank you for doing this, Heather. This is always a really, really fun show to do. And I know it's a show that people always look forward to.
Thank you. Yeah. Is this our 10th?
Probably.
Because I think we started doing this in 2014, like 2014 for the 2013 season.
Okay.
This might be our 10th.
Wow.
I don't know.
Wow.
What is time anymore?
No, like I said, it means nothing. It's a fun show to do. It's a hard show to do because I want to feel like I'm seeing as much as possible before I make this list. And there was certainly stuff that, you know, made your list or your honorable mentions that I pointed out I still haven't seen. Clearly, had I seen The Invitation, it would have been my number one. So that's a
yes.
Bummer. But thank you. It's always great to do.
I'm always happy to return to do our fun recap of horror.
Yay.
What a good year.
Yeah.
I think it was Hargill was talking about how when people look back on 2022, that this is going to be sort of modern horror's 1982.
Interesting.
And I don't think he's wrong. Like, I think this is going to be one of those years in like 20 or 30 years where people would be like, man, how good did we have it in 2022? I really think that.
That's great to hear. I mean,
yeah,
I think I'm glad that we're recognizing it now, you know, I don't know in however many years, you know, will we look back and see that it was even better and or more important than we thought? But I'm glad that you and I are at least saying, like, this was a great year for horror.
Yeah. So suck it. We know.
Suck it. We know what's up. Thank you guys very much for listening. Of course, F This Movie will be back with some bullshit next week. I don't know what yet, but I look forward to it. And Heather will be back very soon to talk about Wes Craven's Cursed.
Yes, indeed. And apparently we will talk more about the movie.
We will try to focus on the movie, everybody. How can we not? It's got Shannon Elizabeth and Scott Baio. So we will have plenty to say.
So much to say.
So much to say. But thank you for listening, and we will talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to F This Movie.